Hello and welcome to the podcast. My name is Donick S. Cause. I've got a very special guest here today. His name is Gary W. Goldstein. He is the producer of such movies as Pretty Woman and Under Siege. He's got a wonderful reputation in Hollywood, and he's written a new book titled Conquering Hollywood. So first of all, Gary, thank you for joining me.
It's a pleasure, Donick. I'm honored to be with you.
Okay. So this book, well, actually, first let's start off with a little bit more about your background. If you tell people, if you can tell the audience a little bit about how you got into producing, I think it's kind of an interesting story in itself.
Well, I have, Donick, probably one of the least planned lives of anyone I know. I out of college, out of Berkeley, I really wasn't quite sure. I had been in the music business, producing all the concerts for the UC Berkeley campus, but I opted not to go into the music business. And then I had no idea what to do, and I had this romantic notion, largely based on my love of story. I was an avid reader when I was young. I loved living inside of story. And the idea, there was a very romantic notion in my head about becoming a criminal defense lawyer defending the underdog and going into court and having to tell a really persuasive, beautiful story. And so I did, and it was, frankly, an ill-conceived match of profession and temperament, so I didn't last long. But I recognized that I loved storytelling. And so I literally packed in my little, back then, Carmen Ghia, and whatever fit came and whatever didn't follow me, from San Francisco down to L.A., because I was determined, even though I didn't know a thing about it, to get into the film business. And it was really just a dream. So I started by being a lit manager, a literary manager representing writers and directors. And the only reason I chose that, or one of the reasons I chose it, other than that I was devoted to the idea of working with screenwriters and filmmakers, was that unlike agents, managers weren't regulated. So I had the freedom to learn as I went. I didn't need a license. And that's how I started.
Okay. And how did you transition from management into producing?
In 1988, there was a big strike, as you may know. The Writers Guild of America went on strike, which for the better part of a year, shut down all production across film and television. So there was this long stretch of time where people could not earn their livelihood in the normal way. There was a big problem for the community of Los Angeles, certainly, but I basically looked at it and said, here's a big opportunity. I'm not going to sit on my hands and worry about this. So I got one of my clients to dust off an early low-budget script, and I raised a couple of $100,000, and off we went, he to direct his first and me to produce my first film together. So it was really the blind, and we made what became a cult classic, cult classic in the sense that this little film called Cannibal Women in the Avocado Jungle of Death, which ran on cable TV, the backwaters of cable TV for, believe it or not, like 15 years, I think. And Bill Maher and Shannon Tweed and Adrienne Barbeau were in it. We had a ball. We had no idea what we were doing, but I got the bug. And it was at that point that I said, okay, I'm going to dissolve the management company, which I'd been doing for at least a decade, in favor of full-time producing. And that's exactly what happened.
Okay. So now we've got this book, Conquering Hollywood. Why did you write this book?
When did I write it?
No, how? Or why, I should say.
Oh, why? Well, yeah, the why is more interesting. I think that the why did I write the book? Donick, I wrote the book because I have this profound love of creative people. And yet what I find is that most creative people are a little bit at a loss how to make their way in the world as a professional. And rather than, you know, over the years, so many people ask, how do you do it? How do you break in? How do you get some traction? How do I earn some money so I can keep at this? And what might seem common sense out in the regular business world is not common sense in the creative sandbox. There's something unique and different when people step into Hollywood, and I use that not literally but figuratively. When people make the choice to become a professional, aspire to be a creative professional, all the rules are out the window, and it seems random and mysterious, a bit vague. Unlike almost every other pursuit you can name. Yeah, you want to be an accountant, a doctor, a baker, a plumber, anything at all. There's pretty much a clear path. There are footsteps that you can follow. You go to this school, you get a degree, you get, you know, certified, you take an exam, and you join the mothership organization, and you network. And I mean, no one questions how do you become an attorney, or how do you become a financial planner. Those things are very clear. How do you become a successful screenwriter or novelist or film director or hyphenate? Those things are less clear. So I was motivated because, A, I love these people. I love people who make the choice to become a creative professional, number one. And number two, it's frustrating to have to try and talk to people one-on-one because there aren't enough hours in the day. So I thought, well, selfishly, if I could distill everything that I learned, because when I came here, I didn't know anyone, and I had to figure out what worked quickly. Out of desperation, out of necessity, or I'd go bankrupt. I had to learn how to make money, and therefore I had to teach my clients how to make money because I was on commission. So I figured if I could distill everything I learned that really, truly worked consistently, just put it in a book, I could hand that book out to absolutely everybody and reach a far wider audience and help more people than just trying to answer their emails and what have you. So motivation was my motivation. And quite frankly, I'm very glad that I followed that impulse.
Well, I'm glad that you wrote this book because I've had the privilege of reading it. And it's not a book on craft. It's a book on, as you say, career and the business end of screenwriting. And I think it's something that's very much needed. So with that in mind, you mention or make mention of the fact that you should treat your screenwriting career like a business. How do we do that?
Well, it seems both obvious and not so obvious. I think that what I really intend by that is it's imperative that we get good at our craft, and I honor that. And there are hundreds and hundreds of great teachers, whether it's in book form or live event or workshop, what have you, to teach you how to be better at your craft, whether you're a producer, cinematographer, a writer, actor. How do you write a better screenplay? There's lots of great teachers. But I couldn't find a good book or even teacher who consistently focuses exclusively on how do you turn your talent into a business. How do you create a career that will reward you, not just spiritually or creatively, but economically, and get you into the center of the, you know, sort of in the beltway, get you so you can option and be hired and sell and be produced and have an enduring many years long career that's very, very deeply satisfying.
Okay.
The answer for me is it's not good enough to stay home and become a master screenwriter or a master fill in the blank. That it's imperative, each of us, as uncomfortable as it may be initially, to say, this means the world to me, and therefore I'm willing to set aside, even if I have a day job, I can find 20, 30 minutes, if not more, every day or at least 5 days a week, that I can devote to the marketing of my craft, of my talent, of my personality. And when I say marketing, that sounds a little bit, to some people, probably a little bit uncomfortable. But really, it's nothing more when you really boil it down. It all comes down to what success is built on, and it's built on relationship. So how do you, in 20, 30 minutes a day, every day, 5 days a week, for the next 6 to 12 months, because if you do this for even 6 to 12 months, I'm not talking years, you will change your landscape. You will change your opportunity. You will elevate the context of you'll have a real career. And you'll have a career because you will have dozens of, maybe not late stage, but early and middle stage, beyond rapport, interrelationship opportunities with human beings who are who are deeply in the game. And if you have a dozen, then two dozen, then 50, I've always had this theory, Donick, that if you could, over time, over the next 1 to 2 years, start to create rapport with up to as many as 100 people who are legitimately in the film and TV business across all the different categories of people, not just agents and producers, but all of them. You would never, ever wonder if you're going to have success over the long term if you have a modicum of talent. It is a given that you will succeed. And that's the missing piece for most creatives.
Yeah.
So,
exactly.
So basically all the strategies in the book are really designed with one end game. How do you have deep connection with the decision makers and their team that will bring, you know, it's not, I hate to say it, but it's not really a meritocracy. If it were, only good scripts would get optioned, only good films would get made. But because we're human beings, it's important to really invest the time to create the relationships that will secure your future, that you can be able to be a creative professional and get rewarded for it hopefully for a lifetime.
Yeah, that makes sense. I guess Hollywood, like any other business, is built on relationships, maybe even more so.
I would dare say more so, yeah.
Yeah. Now, you talk about branding yourself as a screenwriter. Can you elaborate on that a little bit? What you mean by branding?
Yeah, I think it's, people talk, let me use the analogy of an actor. People sometimes say, I see actors who want to try out for every conceivable type of role, every age range, every style of acting, comedy, drama, thrill, you know. And I think that, you know, it's okay when you're a little bit more established, and I don't mean wildly so, but once you're starting to work, to begin to branch out and to have those conversations, because you have the relationships where you can have those conversations based on some success. But if from day one, every meeting you walk into, whether you're an actor or writer, whatever you are, a filmmaker, and people say, you know, people kind of want a sense of you. They want to be able to identify and know how to think of you. If you're trying to be all things to all projects, if you're telling people that you can write science fiction, you write horror, you write comedy, you write romance, you write all these different things, they're never going to know how to think of you when they're in a staff meeting and a project comes up for which they need a writer to come in and pitch to them, right? But if you go in and you say, here's my driver, like I know for me as a producer, there are things that I'm very, very much inclined toward. I've never produced a horror film. I've never produced science fiction. These are not things I'll never do. There are certain categories that are just not essentially me. You know, I always laugh with my friend Laura Ziskin, who is my line producer on Pretty Woman, which is a classically Gary kind of film. She went on to run a major studio. She went on to produce 40, 50 films. She produced the Oscars. She created the franchise Spider-Man. It's a billion-dollar industry. And Laura, God bless her, she's no longer with us. She was a fabulous woman. And I remember sitting at lunch with her and saying, you know, I bow down to you. I could no more. If you had handed me Spider-Man and said, here, you will make $1 billion. All you have to do is produce these films, I would not know how to do it. And it's important to know who you are and what you're capable of and what you want to do and what doesn't inspire you. What you're not is as important as what you are. And I think as you're getting to know people, if you can say, as a screenwriter, here are my drivers. This is sort of my unique persona, my unique experience. This is my love. I grew up loving certain things, certain kinds of characters. This is what I had this gal, Kimberly, who was a student, who said, I love strong, you know, action, female action figures. I like martial arts where there's a female lead. This is because she had a very deep story about what was her cinema paradiso growing up in a small town in the valley in a farming area. That was her dream of getting out. So people know exactly how to think about her, and it's very, very helpful. That's fairly specific, but it may not be exactly what you write, but about who you are. But what's important, and I'm giving you I'm sorry for giving such a long answer. I think what's key is that when you're in a room or a figurative room on a phone line, when you're developing rapport with people, whether it's on the phone, in person, social media, anything, that you start to give them a very clear sense of who you are. And who you are is not a screenwriter. The kinds of stories that you're drawn to, or maybe it's your real life experience, something very unique, these are the things, if you start to communicate your humanity, that's your brand, your deeper humanity, just not making a heavy thing out of it, just this is where I come from, this is who I am, this is what I love, this is what drives me, this is how I got it, why I got into screenwriting, or this is why I chose to write this particular screenplay, why I'm the best person to tell the story because of a unique perspective based on my upbringing. Whatever those things are, the more you share, the more people have something to grab hold of. When you've left the room, they'll remember. And that's important.
Okay. Good advice, actually. Now, when we're talking about, we've touched on networking, but you give us very specific tips for networking in your book. Can you share a few of those with us?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the key for me, I would say the most important thing I would share with screenwriters is not to let life happen or be random, but to consciously and intentionally research and target who it is you want to meet. So if I'm interested in writing, as I said before, let's say I want to write action films or romantic comedies or whatever it is, if that's my primary heart's desire, I'm going to look and I'm going to say who, and it might be career-based or project-based, but let's say career. If that's who I am, then I'm going to go and I'm going to research what are the films over the last handful of years that did pretty well, critically, commercially did pretty well. And they could have been independent, they could have been studio. And I'm going to make a spreadsheet. I'm going to put the titles of the films down the left column, and across the right I'm going to put, 12 or 15 or 20 columns. And I'm going to list the producers, the writer, the editor, the cinematographer, the casting director. I'm just going to go right on down the whole list and say, who are the people associated meaningfully with this film? And I'll divide them into an A, B, and C. Who's in my A list? Out of that whole grouping of films, not just producers, not just agents, but all these different categories of people. And there's my target list. I'm going to start reaching out not to the people at the top of the list, but to their gatekeepers, which is their assistants. I'm going to personally make it my mission to befriend the assistant to every top writer, editor, cinematographer, producer, director, other writer, etc., the agents of all of those people, the managers of all of those people, anyone I can find contact information for. I'm going to make it my job with my 3 cold calls a morning to reach out to and befriend the assistants to all of those people. And that's going to be how I begin to form a real community and a network, going from stranger to familiar to rapport and ultimately into business friendship, so that I have laid the groundwork so that all of those people can become my goodwill ambassadors and speak about me behind my back in a good way, who can either be my consigliere, they can be my advisors, my mentors. They can introduce me to other people in turn. When they move on from their job to the next job, they take me with them, so to speak.
Makes sense.
And so to me, it's the architecture of, it's sort of human billiards and having a strategic architecture. How am I going to identify and know who to talk? Because there's too many people. And you don't want it to be random because that doesn't feel comfortable. You want to feel like you're in control, and you can measure if you do it this way. You can actually have a chart and you can measure your progress. You can say, I made this many calls every day, a week, every week for the last X months. That means, if I've only succeeded in creating a rapport with 1 out of 10 people that I reached out to,
mm-hmm.
I'm doing great, right?
Well, no.
I can make...
Go ahead, Gary.
Go ahead.
Well,
I was going to ask... The math is really simple. If I make 2 calls a day, and that's not a lot, and I do that only 5 days a week, that's 40 calls a month. That's, that's almost 500 calls a year. Mm-hmm. And if that's true, and I end up at the end of the year with only a 1 out of 10 batting average,
right?
There's 4 dozen people that I have meaningful rapport with that I did not 12 months earlier. That is a, to use an overused expression, that is a game changer.
Yeah. Now, what would someone say? Say if someone decides to implement this plan and wants to connect with people, with gatekeepers, what have you, decision makers, what would be your initial approach on a phone call to them? Would you not have to have a reason, a specific reason for calling them?
Not really. I think you automatically have your reason. So I would say you need a reason, yes. You don't need an excuse, and you don't need an ask. And here's what I mean by that. I think that I respect that, that we're all sort of – you and I are wired very much alike. We're all wired very similarly. The first time I met you or you met me, same deal, you said, I don't know that person. The second time it's like, oh, I sort of remember Donick. And the third time I say, oh, it's Donick. Now, it does mean I know you well, but the rule of three says by the time I've had 3 interactions with you, as long as those interactions aren't spread out over too much time, I now suddenly feel more comfortable and receptive to you. So my theory is this: ask advice, advice, not favors, meaning I don't want to ever reach out to someone for the first or second or even third time and say, read my script. Why would I ask a total stranger to do that kind of extraordinary amount of work for me? It just doesn't really make sense. And so what I'd rather do is research deeply the company they work for, the person that they work for. I may not know them, but when I'm on the call the first time, I'm going to say, look, you don't know me. Here's why I'm calling. I'm a screenwriter. I'm relatively new in my career. Here's what I've done, here's where I'm from. But more importantly, I have a couple of questions, and I'm going to take 3.5 minutes of your time. Do you have 3.5 minutes? Is that okay? During that time, you're going to find out their name, where they're from, where they went to school, how they got that job, for God's sakes. Whoever's answering that phone, whoever sits on the desk of that person, is so overqualified to be an assistant, it's ridiculous. This I promise. They were vetted out of 100 or 200 people that were equally qualified. So there must be something, and these people are very ambitious because no one wants to be an assistant. It's an abusive, horrible, underpaid job. They're there for a reason. This is the person you want, because we all grew up in micro generations, because in 6, 12, or 18 months, guaranteed, that person moves on to an elevated, more elevated position. Maybe not at that company, maybe not even in that area of the business. But the important thing is to say, I respect your humanity. You could be my mentor. I'm calling you because I so respect the company that you're in, the individual that you work for. I was particularly drawn to call you because of X, this recent project, or I noticed that you're developing Y project. I do not want to ask a favor of you right now, other than I would like your opinion about something. In your travels, and if you don't have name or names, one or more names, that's okay. And I'm making stuff up on this call as I go.
Okay.
I want to ask them, have you come across, I'm not asking for an introduction, I'm not asking for a referral, I'm not asking you to put your name on the line or risk anything, but I'm just asking your opinion. Have you come across one or more young literary managers or young literary agents, not nearly as elevated as your boss, that you respect? Now, they may not, but guess what? What am I doing? I'm gathering super valuable information. At the same time, I'm showing I'm so deferential and honoring of them. I'm treating them as my mentor. I've asked about them contextually, which no one does. You're the only person that day who gave a crap about that individual, because everyone else is rushing past them to get to the boss in a hurry. Is it easy to charm someone, maybe to actually see it as fun and not be nervous about it because you're not asking anything? The call to action at the end of the call is to set up your next interaction. And that's it. That's the whole game. My whole mission when I'm meeting someone new is, how do I get to the next interaction? And I'm not going to rush off the phone. I'm going to use up every inch of that 3.5 minutes. I'm going to say strange things like that. I'm going to, the next call, I'm going to say, this time I had actually 4.2 minutes. but what I do when I'm, before I end the call, I say, listen, I really, the 3.5 minutes are up. I have to go. Thank you for the time. I appreciate it, but I don't want to overstay my welcome. I am going to call you a week from Tuesday at 1 o'clock. You know, would that be okay? And they're going to say, yeah. And you call at 1 o'clock because their boss is away and they're less stressed. And now you just, you, because you're being very clear and very professional and having fun and making it a different rhythm from their normal call, you become the welcome presence. You don't ask, you don't say, can you read my script? Can I send you a script? Because you're like, now you're just like every other stranger who's asking for hours of their life. Not a good strategy.
Okay.
By the third or fourth call, you can say, you know what, I'm going to send you 15 pages of my script because, you know, by now you have a real rapport. Frequency is key. You do it every week, every 10 days maximum, until you have 3 or 4 calls under your belt, maybe a couple of emails in between. If you learn that they have a particular interest in life, a sport, a philanthropy, an interest, a movie, type of movie, you share a review. You email them an article of interest. You do something. Asking zero response, nothing in return. You show that you're thoughtful, and you have a value exchange. I think the biggest mistake most screenwriters or other creatives make early on is they don't think they have value to add to contribute, and that's absolutely not true.
Very.
And I could ramble on for hours.
No, I'm enjoying picking your brain. Now, you talk also about the importance of the log line, how constructive. I think you said there are 3 key elements to the log line. Can we talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, I think a log line is you know, it's kind of like the North Star for a project. Because, and I know some writers who struggle with a log line either before or they ever start to write a script or throughout the writing process, meaning, you know, let me take a break from writing my script. And once an hour for a few minutes, I play with my log line. And I do that for a period of 10 days until I play with every word, every comma, and every combination of words to create phrases till it absolutely is what it should be. And that helps guide not only my writing, but it really becomes like the shorthand way of communicating the essence of this journey that you're writing. So that when you're writing a cover letter, when you're giving a verbal pitch, no matter what you're doing, you're setting a context so that you can dance left, dance right, but they still have that anchor in mind. You just framed up the entirety of your story in a log line, and the log line is really pretty basic, right? It's usually I never like to see the log line tell how the picture ends, how the story ends, but you don't need to leave them wanting something more. But it's basically, you know, who's the picture about? What do they want? What stands in the way? How do they overcome it? I mean, you hear a log line defined a lot of different ways. But fundamentally, it's like, you know, who's our hero? What's their mission? What stands in the way? What do they have to, you know, do to overcome it? And that's it. It implies how they're changing, you know, over the course of the story. But you don't go into a lot of detail, you know? You don't say, you know, I say this in the book. I forget which examples I used, but it's not Dorothy, it's a lonely farm girl from Kansas. You use the descriptive version of your character. You don't get bogged down in supporting characters. You don't get bogged down in detail. You just stay with that high line journey, at the top line of that journey. So I just think that that's a great way to feel confident when you're talking with people about the project, and sort of, it's a shorthand way to focus them on and let them know where they're going to start, where they're going to end up.
Now, you mentioned the DO list. Can we talk about that?
DO just stands for, that's my my DO, is a desired outcome. And this is, again, most of the stuff we're talking about, Donick, I mean, it's, there's nothing all that wildly unique about them. These are entrepreneurial strategies. I would say this should be true for anybody, regardless of whether you're a writer or a director or a candlestick maker. It's when I reach out to people, by the time I pick up a telephone or send an email or go to a physical meeting or whatever it might be, I know I've researched this person to the ends of time. I know everything, and it's shocking how much we can learn today because of Google. I mean, you can, if I searched on a, how much am I going to learn about you online? A lot.
Too much. Way too much.
Yeah, way too much today. And that's, but if you're a positive-minded person and you have this sort of agenda, that really, it is so powerful. If I call you and I know certain things about you, your reaction generally is, oh my gosh, this person is very thoughtful. They cared enough to find out who the heck, that's it's like, oh my God, I like them already. I got in a car, a friend of mine who was out from New York, this wonderful guy who worked with Michael Jackson since he was 5 years old. He helped Ken Cragen with We Are the World and all this stuff. He's worked with every top music act. And so Tommy and I were going to see, he was introducing me to this friend of his, and we show up at his house, we get in a car to go off to dinner. And this guy that I'm meeting for the very first time ever was, to say that he is in his own right very successful would be an understatement. We get in the car, and he starts regaling me with stories about me.
Wow.
With each anecdote, he follows with a question. He knew where I went to school. He knew what college. He knew so much about me. He watched every video of me online. And I was like, oh, my God. That makes this guy special. And I don't mean because it's so not common. So if you're the person who cares enough to research who Donick is and really know, that's not to be a lot. It's not about volume. It's about a couple of key crucial things where you can go, oh my gosh, this is what set you apart for me. I want to ask you a question. And you are naturally thinking in the back of your head, who does this? This is not common. You care enough to go out of your way to find these things out. That tells me a lot about who you are. So, I don't even remember what the question was, Donick, to be honest. But if you approach people that way, it's pretty much the door's open and you can do what you want.
Okay.
What was your question that got us into that?
What is the DO list, and how do we create that and use it?
Oh, and very simple. It's just like what really knowing why are you calling them and what do you want the outcome to be. If I call you and I don't know exactly, and it's not because I'm going to blurt something out in the first 60 seconds of our call. I won't. In fact, I never do, unless I know you really well.
Mm-hmm.
But when I do call you, other than to get information and develop some sort of rapport and all those things, I do want to have a desired outcome, and that desired outcome might be as simple as what I said earlier. It might be a second call, a second opportunity to deepen that relationship over the phone or otherwise. So it might be as simple as, before you leave the call. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to call you next Tuesday at 1 o'clock. Is this your best number? What's your best email? Don't ask permission. Just ask it that way.
Okay.
Don't say, can I have your email? Just, what's your best email? I'll send you a confirmation. Thank you so much. You start to gather information, data. You act very calmly, very relaxed, but in control and professional. So your desired outcome could just be that. Another interaction, your desired outcome might be, I want a coffee meeting, or I want you to read 15 pages of my script, or I want to know who you would recommend without a specific referral. Or it may be down the road when I have more rapport with you, I want a referral. I want you to introduce me to someone. Or the desired outcome might not be something coming in my direction. It might be my desired outcome in our call is, I want to introduce you or ask if you would like to be introduced, better yet, to someone that I think is very worth knowing. In the last couple of weeks, I've developed in recent time rapport with a fabulous person who happens to be fill in the blank. It occurred to me that might be someone that's useful for you to know as well. May I make that introduction? They say yes. Then I, after the call, create this cross-introductory email. Donick, I want you to meet Jill. Jill, I want you to meet Donick, with a couple of sentences about each and your respective contact information. I hope you enjoy your conversation. I have just done the coolest thing ever. I do this every day. I am always and perpetually looking for quality people to introduce to one another. Your social equity goes up so quickly, it's astonishing, because it's selfish and selfless at the same time. It's selfish because you actually care about these people and you want them to know quality folks that you care about and know they could have great opportunity with. It appears very selfless because you're doing them a great favor.
Yeah.
There's so many ways to have a desired outcome that may or may not be an immediate or direct or tangible benefit to you.
Okay. Gary, I think we're running out of time here, but I do want to have you tell everybody where they can find your website, et cetera.
There's the new website for the book is conqueringhollywood.com. Literally, as we speak, it's almost done. It's a work in progress, but the site's fairly done, but you can certainly go there. The book is not yet purchasable on the website, but it will be. Similarly, you could go to Amazon.com, although having checked today, I would say wait a few days. If you're listening to this, wait a week. And
okay.
Safely, you will be able to you will find Conquering Hollywood or my name, Gary W. Goldstein, in a search on Amazon. The full title of the book is Conquering Hollywood, The Screenwriter's Blueprint for Career Success. So those would be there's others, but I would say either Amazon.com or ConqueringHollywood.com would be the two places to look for it.
Okay, and just so everybody knows, we are recording this on August 19th, the 15th, the 2013. So this for a while, so just so people know when a few days starts. So it starts a few days from August 19th, correct, Gary?
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
Fantastic. Gary, thank you so much. We're talking with Gary W. Goldstein. Thank you for being on the show, Gary.
I appreciate it, Don. Sorry for the long-winded answers, but I'm absolutely thrilled to be, if this is even remotely helpful to any of the folks in your community. I know that's a substantial community. I'm delighted, and I thank you for the opportunity.
I think we'll be extremely helpful, and I wish we had more time to spend together, but I appreciate you can give us because you've been there and done it all, and words of wisdom certainly apply here. So, Gary, thank you now.
Thank you, Dominic.